Buckle up and prepare for takeoff. Welcome to Rising Above with John O'Leary. Described as one of the best inspirational speakers in America, John is living proof that overwhelming odds cannot compare with the power of faith and the perseverance of the human spirit. Be inspired. Find your passion. Reach your potential. Now, here's your host, John O'Leary.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to Rising Above, and I'm your host, John O'Leary. This program's focus, as you know, is on you and your walk in life. It is here that we celebrate the possibility of all individuals to do, to be, to serve, to love, and impact more profoundly. We discuss the scars of our past, what caused them, how we heal from them, and then become stronger because of them. We talk about our faith, the power of the human spirit, and the gift to choose our own path going forward. Now, you may listen in on this station at 6 p.m. every Wednesday and Friday evening. And as a reminder, you can always listen online at www.risingabove.com. You know by now, my friends, that we begin each and every show with a question. And this is going to be a powerful show today. It's going to be a powerful question. So if you're at home, you may want to pull out the laptop or pull out the pen and write this question down. Here we go. The question is, how do I live a life of beauty and impact today when I've experienced so much pain and so much loss yesterday? Let me say that one more time for you. How do I live a life of beauty and impact today, right now, when I have experienced so much pain, so much loss yesterday? I want to begin with sharing a poem, a bit of a short story before I bring in our guest. Our guest is someone who is able to answer this question, not easily, but he's doing it each and every day in spite of the pain that he's experienced in his own life. So let me start by reading this poem. My friends, you can shed a tear that he is gone, or you can smile because he has lived. You can close your eyes and you can pray that he'll come back, or you can open your eyes and see all that he's left. Your heart can be empty because you can't see him, or you can be full of the love that you shared. You can turn back on tomorrow and live yesterday, or you can be happy for tomorrow and you can live because of yesterday. You can remember him only that he is gone, or you can cherish his memory and let it live on. You can cry and close your mind, be empty and turn your back. Or you can do what he'd want. You can smile, open your eyes, love, and go on. And that's a poem by David Harkins, my friends. And I'm going to repeat this question because the goal in our lives, my friends, is to make our lives a living memorial for those that are no longer with us. Our opportunity then is to smile, to open our eyes, to love, and to fight on. There is no greater memorial than that. Here's the question again for us today before I bring in our guest, Steve Grant. The question, you may want to write this down, you'll certainly hear it a lot, is how do I live a life of beauty and impact today when I have experienced so much pain and so much loss yesterday? My friends, about 18 months ago, I was leading a leadership session in Greenville, South Carolina, and a gentleman shared part of a story that you will hear today. And when I heard it, when my friend Ben Newman and I heard this together, we were blown away that this man was even here with us, learning and living and smiling in spite of the incredible pain that this man had so recently endured. Steve Grant has been with Northwestern Mutual Financial Network for 32 years in Greenville, South Carolina. He's a father. He began a charity that you will learn a lot about today called Chris and Kelly's Hope Foundation. I consider him a dear friend. Consider it an honor that he flew from South Carolina to be with us here in St. Louis today. So, Steve Grant, welcome to Rising Above with John O'Leary.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Man, it's great to have you live. And Steve, we're going to get into your testimony and get into some of the challenges you faced recently. But before we do, and I mentioned this to you, I always like to start with learning about the man before he became the person that he is today. So take me back to childhood. Where'd you grow up, Steve?
I was born in New York City and lived there for 5 years. And then we moved to Paramus, New Jersey, which is a suburb of New York City, and grew up there. It's a great small bedroom community of New York. It's known for the largest shopping mall in the world, and where people used to come save the sales tax on the weekend from New York. So my little town of Paramus, which was 5,000, swelled up to over a million a day during the holidays.
Wow.
But it's a great town, and I don't go back there enough. But it was a great place to grow up and live.
Okay.
I stayed there till I was 18. I was a three-sport star in high school and went on to Furman University on a baseball scholarship in Greenville, South Carolina. And that's how I stayed in Greenville.
So that brought you down to South Carolina. You grew up with both parents?
Grew up with both parents. Both parents are still alive. And I stay close to them. They've also moved down to South Carolina about 12 years ago.
Okay. Any brothers?
I have a twin brother in New York. Who's the star of the stars of the art world. He's with Sotheby's. And I have a brother who works with a company called D'Angelo Brothers in Hazelden, Pennsylvania, and he travels around the world for them.
All right. So, and in full disclosure, I have met this man. He's nowhere near as good-looking as Steve Grant, but he certainly carries the same last name.
Yeah, he was always known as the better-looking one growing up.
Yeah, that's changed. He has a great radio face now. So let me ask you, Steve, why'd you pick insurance? Because I think this is something that's going to come back to serve you later on in your life. Why'd you pick life insurance?
Well, that was interesting. When I was taking aptitude tests at Furman to talk about what I want to do for the rest of my life, I had this thought I wanted to be a lawyer. And every aptitude test I took said I should be a salesperson. So you know, you can only hear it so many times, but I still decided that I was going to apply for law school and was accepted. And at the time, I was also planning on getting married, so I deferred my acceptance for a year, but started in the life insurance business in New York City with Northwestern Mutual, and then moved to Greenville, South Carolina, and the rest was history. Never picked up on my acceptance to law school, which I'm very happy I didn't.
So you picked a career in insurance. You found love in Greenville. Is that right?
I found love in Greenville. That's right.
Not only the community, the profession, but a bride you married.
I did. I married a girl that I went to school with who actually lived an hour from me from Paramus, but we met in Greenville.
How about that?
So, and we were married for 25 years.
Okay. Any kids through the?
I have two sons, two beautiful sons, Christopher and Kelly. One was born in 1984, and one was born in 1986.
All right, so I'm going to repeat the question because we're going to get kind of into this pretty quick today. I think what your story involves is the kind of pain that many of our listeners have today, some of them through loss, others through never feeling that they were fully fulfilled. So here's the question again. How do I live a life of beauty and impact today when I have experienced so much pain and so much loss yesterday? When you hear that question, Steve, what comes up to you? What personal stories jump to the forefront?
Well, it's pretty obvious. You know, when you plan for a long marriage, you plan for a long relationship with your children, a long relationship with your grandchildren, and then tragedy strikes, and one of your sons becomes addicted to drugs and alcohol, and extends for 7 or 8 years. You go through 5 different rehabs. Everything that you read about and talk about that happens to a family when you have an addicted child, I said would never happen to me, and happened to me. You go through financial troubles. You go through divorce, which ultimately happened in my case, something that I'm very much against and fought hard to not have happen. You do have effects on other children in your family. So, and then ultimately have death, because ultimately I found my 21-year-old son dead of an overdose in the bedroom next to me while he was in college of a cocaine and methadone overdose, an accidental overdose, but a cocaine and methadone overdose. And then 4 years later, you have another son who, not that you've neglected, but you put him on the sideline for a little while you're taking care of the other one. And you love him and you talk to him every day, and you kind of hope that he's not going down the same path, and find out that where one was addicted for 8 years, my other son began a heroin habit and that lasted for 8 months. He had a overdose in a parking lot in Charleston, South Carolina, in March of 2010 that I found out later on was, he told me was an emergency room visit because he was exhausted. Found out a few months later it was a heroin overdose, and then got very active trying to help him. Brought him back home to finish his last 3 hours of college, and he promised me he was doing very, very well. At the same time, I was trying to send him to rehab. But what I learned from my first son was that unless you really want to go and really want to succeed, it's not worthwhile. So, but unfortunately, found Kelly dead of a heroin overdose in his room one Sunday morning. And he was trying, because the medical examiner said this was not the body of an intravenous drug user. This was the we found one needle mark in his body, which tells you about the grasp that a drug like heroin has over you. It's virtually impossible to quit without some sort of intervention.
You know, I'm assuming the listeners right now have their mouths wide open like I do, and I've heard the story 5 times, and I know you as a friend, so I've prayed about you and your grief and all you've been through many more times than that. You've lost your marriage because of a drug use that one of your sons has. You eventually lose that young man. You, in time, will lose your only other boy. Steve, when that happens to you, how do you take your next breath? How do you step forward into life?
Well, it's certainly not easy, and I do have bad days, and I credit a lot to my faith, and I also credit a lot to John, and Ben Newman when you came down to Greenville in January of 2011 and did a Ben Newman boot camp and John O'Leary boot camp, and because the furthest thing from my mind was thinking about what I can do for others when I'm already thinking about how I'm going to grief myself. But literally that day, I know God was with me, because I'm not the type of person to stand up and talk about my experiences. But I stood up that day, as you remember, and said I want my legacy to be that I did everything I could to help young adults and adolescents who are addicted to drugs and alcohol.
Well, brother, you're doing it. We're going to hear a lot more about that. We're going to hear a lot more about your boys, a lot more about drug use and how we parents and concerned citizens can do more for it. My friends, you are listening to Rise and Above with your host, John O'Leary. You will not want to go anywhere, so stay tuned.
Getting good at starting over every time.
Well, welcome back, my friends, to Rise and Above with your host, John O'Leary. This song that we hear coming out of that last break, You Must Think I'm Strong to Let Me Go What I'm Going Through, it's a song that I think resonates with what our guest today has gone through, what he goes through. I think any of us who have experienced loss realize it's never a singular moment in time. It's something that kind of hangs with us like gray mitts for the rest of our lives. And the question, my friends, that we are asking and seeking to answer today with our friend Steve Grant is, how do I live a life of beauty and impact today when I've experienced so much pain and so much loss yesterday? So, Steve Grant, welcome back to Rising Above.
Thanks for having me.
My friend, you are at Northwestern Mutual. You have been through divorce, and you have lost two children to drug use, to drug overdoses. You shared with us that in the first segment. You started to hint a little bit of what you're doing with your lives. You went so quickly through it. I think a lot of folks are just trying to catch their breath, including me, and they want to learn more about what happened, about how this could happen to you. Obviously, you're a professional man. You were married. How do you lose sight of what's going on in the lives of two kids? So take us back to when your oldest son, Chris, when the first signs started to show up in his life.
I was actually known as the guy that coached all the kids. And I coached both my boys from T-ball to however far they went up. And both of my boys excelled in soccer. Christopher excelled in basketball and soccer and was a gifted athlete. And one evening he came to me. I was sitting downstairs. He was 13 years old. He was only freshman on the basketball team, only freshman on the soccer team, 6 foot, 170 pounds, had tons of friends. And he came to me, and I won't use the word he exactly used, but he said, "Dad, I don't want to be a screw-up." And I said, "Chris, I don't understand what you're talking about." And we had a very close relationship. "Dad, I don't want to be a screw-up." And I said, "You're going to have to be a little bit more specific, son, so I can help you. I just don't want to be a screw-up." And I said, "Okay, well, we'll talk about it. When you want to tell me more about it, we'll talk about it." So it scared me a little bit. But then about 2 weeks after that, he came downstairs again when I sit there and quiet, need to catch up on some work or read. And he said, "Dad, you're my only friend in this life." Now, that raised the hair on the back of my neck. I had helped start the suicide crisis hotline in Greenville, South Carolina, about 10 years prior, and went through the course and learned about the language that sometimes people are telling you something. They're telling you words, but they're really not telling you what they mean. And that remark that I was his only best friend in the world scared me. My dad today is probably my best friend, but when I was 14, he kind of fell down the rungs of the ladder a little
bit. That's
right. Like every 14-year-old boy. But from that point on, I sought help and actually had made enough friends and known enough people. I had him in a psychiatrist's office the next day. And the psychiatrist told us, without violating the patient's privilege, that your son is telling you that he's addicted to drugs and alcohol and it's controlling his life and he doesn't know what to do about it. And that really started 7-8 years of an ongoing battle to try to figure out how we could help him through 5 different rehabs, through many different stories, through legal problems, through car accidents, through arrests, the various things. And I know it sounds strange when people hear this, but this was a good kid.
Yeah.
This was a good kid. This was a kid who was very honest, maybe not with himself, but he was very honest and open with his parents.
Well, and a beautiful young man, bright, athletic, popular, everything going right. When you heard the first words from the psychologist that he was addicted to drugs and alcohol, were you stunned?
I was stunned, but I also had warned my children that we come from a long line of substance abusers. Not me personally, not their mother personally, but we have addiction and alcoholism in our family, and I believe there's a predisposition towards it. And I did warn them when they were young that they might like something that they try. And I do believe cigarettes start, and that's a gatekeeper. That's a gateway to other things. Marijuana is certainly a gateway to other things, even though people like to tell you it's not. I think it starts there often.
I would agree. And do you know when your son, Chris, started to become addicted to smoking, drinking, whatever the first drugs were of his choice?
Yeah, I do. Since he was the only freshman on these teams, he used, and he did suffer from low self-worth and low self-esteem. So he was always looking for ways that he could befriend himself further with older kids. And I'm not saying it's the fault of older kids, but Chris would be the one to get a fake ID. He could be the one that had enough nerve to go into the liquor store. I'll never forget the first time I did my little intervention when he was going for his first rehab, and he made me promise not to arrest the liquor store that was selling him alcohol, because he was the only one in Greenville that he was selling alcohol to. So my poor son was being conditioned by this liquor store owner that he was the only person he was selling liquor to, and he was special. And I made that promise to him, but about 3 or 4 years later, I had him closed down. So,
a man of his word, Steve Grant.
Yeah, that's right.
You did the right thing, Steve.
Yeah, I did, I think.
Your son, were there moments of, oh, I think we finally put this behind us, this drug use, this alcohol use?
You know, those were very good times when he came home during between rehabs, or when we went to visit him during rehabs, when he really bought into it. But every time the drug got a little bit tougher, became a stronger drug, a little better drug, a little challenge. At these various rehab facilities, and he did go to twice where a very famous golfer went last year, and so he went to some very good places to try to treat it. And I'll never forget, we were at a parents' meeting or a family meeting, and at those meetings, that's when your son or your daughter has a chance to say how sorry they are for everything they've caused. And I'll never forget, Christopher went through his discussion, and then a girl who was a recovering addict, who was part of the program, she looked over at Christopher and she said, "Christopher, I'd like to believe what you're telling us, but I think you're a drug addict on training wheels." And I'll never forget that comment, and it scared me. And she was right. She was right. And maybe you have to walk in those shoes to believe somebody, but you want to believe them. But you know, he would get back and he'd be good, but he always gravitated towards going back to it.
What is the pull, Steve? For many of us listening who have no idea what this is even really about, what's the attraction?
You know, I think the pull is the drug of choice, and the pull is peer pressure. Wanted to be, you know, I think it's a combat. These kids have a very, very, I think each one of them's problems unique, but the symptoms and the characteristics are very similar. They typically have a void in their education somewhere. They typically have a low underlying depression. They typically may not have a great relationship with their parents. They typically have tried drugs or alcohol prior to the age of 13. They say that you have a 36% chance of being an alcoholic as an adult if your age of first use was under 13 years old.
Wow.
And we have a lot of children out there today that they do try drugs or alcohol prior to the age of 13.
You know, I think a lot of it is unawareness. I, as a speaker, come through various schools all around the country, and I always ask the question, do you have any issues with alcohol or drug use? And the answer is almost always not here.
No. One is, I think it's taboo to talk about because you don't want to publicize that. And two, let's face it, you're not going to tell your mother or father that you just smoked marijuana for the first time.
Are kids pretty good at hiding this kind of stuff, the drinking, the drug use?
Yeah. You know, it's amazing the things we did when we knew this was going on. Everybody leaves their book bags at the door. Everybody empties their pockets at the door. You know, eventually nobody wanted to come to the Grant's house. and then obviously, you know, when your kids go out and they're going to spend the night at a friend's house, you know, we started, have Mr. or Mrs. O'Leary give us a call just to let them know that you're going to be staying there tonight. And you wouldn't believe how many times the story changed and, I decided not to stay with
That's
the
right.
O'Learys tonight. So, you know, you had to do those things. And I guess I regret I didn't do them sooner, but we certainly did them a lot when we knew we had a problem.
Looking back on Steve, were there indicators before that time when he came down to you as a young man? Did you have a sense before that something's just wrong here?
Not really. You know in your mind that your son or daughter's out there and can be exposed to it. I knew in my mind that if my children were exposed to it, they might like it. We did begin to start seeing more and more overt signs after we knew Chris was using drugs and alcohol. We did see bottles under chairs and beer cans under stuff different places. We lived behind a fence line and we saw things dumped behind a fence line. So They were out there.
What is this addiction and the challenge dealing with it doing to you, your wife, and your son, Kelly?
It's just a devastating effect because you're in constant conflict, and you're constantly second guessing decisions that you make, and you live your life really for the benefit of one child and immerse yourself in his or her issue. And I remember telling my son one day that I didn't recognize him anymore. And he didn't like that, but I told him, I said, I just don't recognize you anymore. And I didn't.
Was young Kelly, how much younger was Kelly?
2 years younger.
Was he looking up with envy or stunned disappointment at his older brother?
I think he was disappointed, but what I didn't realize was the strength of their relationship. Because after Chris died, I realized that Kelly was very close to his brother, and I never assumed it because I really didn't think they had a bond. It certainly wasn't a drug bond. It was a different bond. It was the bond of a brother's.
Well, and I'm looking at this picture. We have about a minute left in the segment. It's a picture of you and your two boys, and these are the most healthy, athletic, and we'll post this on our website at riseandabove.com. These boys are just beautiful young men.
Yeah, they were, and that picture, actually, my son is in blue. That was just when he came home from his first rehab.
All right, back from his first rehab. When we come back from our second break, we're going to learn about what happens next to these two young men, what happens with Steve Grant, what he's doing for the community today because of it. My friends, you are listening to Rise and Above with your host, John O'Leary.
Time for a milestone, time to begin again, reevaluate. Who I really am? Am I doing everything to follow your will? Or just climbing aimlessly over these hills? So show me what it is you want from me. I give
Welcome back to Rise and Above with your host, John O'Leary. You know, my friends, that you are always invited to follow me on my personal website. That site is www.risingabove.com. We have old shows there. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, sign up for our free, everybody loves that word, our free newsletter, and learn much more about who we are and what our mission really is all about. That site, again, is www.risingabove.com. And I'll give you one more reason to go there tonight. You can listen to the first half of this show if you're just tuning in right now. This show with Steve Grant. He is a friend of mine. He works at Northwestern Mutual, has been there for 32 years in Greenville, South Carolina. He is the president, the founder of Chris and Kelly's Hope Foundation. And the reason for that foundation is also the reason for the show. I'm going to start with the question, then we'll get back into Steve's story. Here's the question for the show today, my friends. How do I live a life of beauty and impact today when I have experienced so much pain and so much loss yesterday? And that question rings true for our guest, Steve Grant. Over the last several years, he has lost his marriage. He's also lost his only two boys to drug use. He was sharing the story of Chris, his oldest son, who spent years in and out of rehab as dad is trying to help his son overcome this incredible challenge. And take us through the story. You mentioned, Steve, that five times in and out of rehab. Was there ever a moment where you finally figured you had this thing licked?
No, you know, not really. It was five attempts, and I really look back and enjoy those times in between those rehabs when, for a time being, he was my son again. He was our son again, and he was his brother's brother. But it never seemed to work. And, you know, I was always told that you have to go to a program where you need 18 months and you need to be re-socialized and rewired, basically. And I finally bought into that. One, it's very expensive. And two, you're going to leave your son for 18 yes. months. And one of the stories I tell folks was after two failed attempts at short-term rehabilitation programs, one in Tennessee for 100 days, and then one back in Greenville.
So 100 days is short-term, huh?
100 days is short-term, yep. And later on we'll talk about some of the things that I'm working towards that end. But I finally said, Lord, lead me someplace. And I met somebody, and I researched, and I was taken to a program in Houston, Texas. And most of these programs are not really in Houston, Texas, or in Knoxville. They're in these little towns that are 30 miles away that no one's ever heard of. And I took them out there, and it was $9,000 a month for 18 months. I didn't have $9,000, but I had it that night. I don't know where I was going to get the next $9,000 from. But I took him out there. I went down a two-mile dirt road, dropped him off at this facility, and he was met there by several 14, 15, 16-year-old boys, who I thought appeared that they were going to actually physically keep him there, although he could walk if he wanted to. And I went back down that, said goodbye to him, went back down, gave him the $9,000, went back down the dirt road for 2 miles. I got a little bit lost getting back to my hotel room in Houston, only to find my son had beaten me back there. He had run down the dirt road and hitchhiked and got back to the hotel room. And I said, Chris, what are you doing here? And he said, I'm not going there, Dad. And I said, well, I have one ticket home for me. And I left him in Houston, Texas by himself for 6 months. And somehow he made it. And that was one of the five high schools he went to after being in a high school for being this in one school for about 10 years. He went to five high schools after started using drugs, only to get his GED.
In Houston. By himself. He's growing himself up.
Yep. And it was a point where it was tough love. I remember the whole flight home crying, thinking, how can I go home and leave my son here? And I did. And he found a relative, and a distant relative, and made friends. He had no problem making friends. Unfortunately, they were not the good ones.
That's right.
But he was very resourceful.
And Steve, some of the folks who've never been in a situation like this, and unfortunately in our families, we've seen this firsthand. But if you haven't been here right now, folks listening are thinking, this guy is a first-class jerk. What a horrible father. How do you leave your boy in Houston with no cash?
Yeah. Well, I gave him $20.
Well, you gave him 20 bucks. So that answers that question. But for the folks who think $20 is a little bit short, how do you respond to that?
At one point, you get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And my hope was that he'd go back there. And at some point, you've got to let go and let them decide for themselves what's going to happen. And take that risk. You know, jump off the pier in the dark and not know where the water is. And I was at that point where I was willing to do that.
Did you know how critical the issue was? Like how life-threatening indeed? Not just behaviorally a problem, but this was life-threatening.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely it was. Absolutely.
What was the drug of choice, Steve, that he's...
At that time, it was probably marijuana. It always seemed to be marijuana. He went to his first rehab in Tennessee and wrote me a letter, and he said, you know, Dad, all I do is a little bit of weed, and everybody else is doing intravenous drugs. I don't have a problem. And, you know, he never did intravenous drugs, to my knowledge, but he did use mushrooms, use cocaine, use methadone, never heroin, probably pills, different kind of opiates, but ultimately died of a methadone and cocaine overdose.
Take us up to that moment. This happens in your own backyard, in your own bedroom.
Yeah, this happens in his bedroom. I came home on a Friday. He was in school. He was in college. And he was sleeping. He slept a lot. And so it wasn't uncommon that I would open his door and he'd be sleeping. Well, this particular day, I opened his door and he was snoring, but what he was really doing was dying. And I didn't know it. And my dad had come over to visit, and he wanted to see Christopher. We went upstairs, and he was still sleeping. And unfortunately, he was dying. And the next day, I went in his room, and, you know, it's a very sobering thing to know that he's already, rigor mortis is setting in, and he's passed away. Very, looked like he was sleeping. And that's what would happen. In hindsight, had I been able to determine that he was dying and not sleeping, he may have had some issues with his brain if he was revived. And so, you know, that was very difficult for me. But I always knew there was a chance that if Christopher continued to do what he was doing, that that day would come.
Did he ever think that was possible, Steve?
We never talked about it. I think that Christopher thought he was invincible, but he's a smart kid too, and I think he hated what he was doing. If I have a few minutes, I can tell you a great story of a young man who wrote me about a month ago and said, "I'm so affected." A young man's in recovery, and he said, "I'm so affected by your children and their deaths, because they were my friends." And he said, "They have helped me stay sober." And this was a young man, John, who one day I came home from work, and Christopher was in the house, and he should have been in school. And I said, "Chris, what are you doing here?" He said, "Well, I'm just home for lunch, and Dad, you shouldn't be here. You need to leave." I said, "You want me to leave my own house?" And so he said, "Something's going down, Dad." And so what happened in this nice country club neighborhood in Greenville was, I went upstairs, and sure enough, I look out my window, and there's my son Christopher in a fist fight with a kid in the middle of the street, and it was probably over drugs, and one of those fights where no one's going to win, and the fight finished, and Christopher was bloody, and the other kid was bloody. They had stopped traffic for about 5 minutes on a fairly busy street, and I'll never forget it, but Christopher yelled at the top of his lungs as we were walking up the driveway together, "This life sucks." And I remember saying, "Chris, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be this way." And that young man that was in the fight with him in the street is the young man that a month ago reached out to me and said, "You know, your kids have helped me save my life. Because I don't want to die."
You know, Steve, to bury your own child, it's a pain that I hope and pray to never endure. It's a pain that you've endured twice. Take me back through the first one. What's this like, having a child carried out of your house in a body bag and going through the entire process of that kind of grief with your little boy, 18 years old or so, still at home?
Well, my other son was away at college. My other son was a freshman at Birmingham Southern, and it's tough to make that phone call. They call the student service people to tell them that his brother's passed away and he needs to come home. That's difficult, but it is difficult to watch a body bag leave your house. You know, in Christopher's situation, he died a very peaceful death, and I'm thankful for that. My other son died a gruesome death. You know, curled up in the corner of a room with vomit and blood coming out of his mouth, with a thing around his armband, and not a very pretty sight, unfortunately, and then to have him leave in a body bag, you know, it's very difficult. And I talk a lot to people about you just don't understand what that experience is, and if I have trouble on a daily basis, or when I do have trouble, it is thinking about how I found them, how they looked, having a body bag leave your house. It is very difficult.
I have a friend whose son died in a drinking and driving accident. And to this day, even though this is not that gentleman's fault, he blames himself for not doing something to rectify the path of his a beautiful young man. This is a good friend of mine. You've had two sons die really at their own hands through poor choices. You feel grief around that? Not grief. You feel guilt around that?
You know, everyone, I get asked that question often about guilt. And I think grief is built on guilt, a lot of it. And I have very little guilt. I did everything humanly possible. Now, would I do things differently? Yes, a little bit differently. But did I leave it on the field? I left it on the field. To the detriment of my marriage, to the detriment of my finances, to the detriment of relationships with friends and family. And they know that. So I don't have a lot of guilt.
It's only been 18 months or so since you lost your second boy. This is still so raw. And we hear you tell the story, and it's so matter of fact. I'm amazed you were able to share it at all, Steve. It humbles me and honors me, and I don't know how you get through even sharing this part of the story. We'll get into the next chapter next. That's a great part of the story. But the loss, I don't know how you share it. I don't know how you breathe through it.
It's tough some days.
Yeah.
It's tough some days. And I'm a strong person, and I probably don't wear things on my sleeve. I typically have them very upbeat.
Yeah.
But in the quiet night by myself, sometimes I read a lot of things about grief, and I read a lot of scripture, and those things help me get through and prepare for the next day.
You sense God? Is it part of the story?
Absolutely. No question about it.
My friends, we're going to find out where God is in this story when we return, because right now it seems like he's absent, but as we all know, he's in the middle of it all. My friends, you're listening to Rise and Above with your host, John O'Leary. Stay tuned for the final segment.
Oh, but you can't shake the feeling that it's not true tonight. She knows all the answers, and she's rehearsed all the lines. And so she'll try to do better, but then she's too weak to try. Oh, but don't you know who you are?
Well, welcome back to Rising Above, my friends, with your host, John O'Leary. If you're just tuning in right now, you have missed a roller coaster ride. And to be very frank, most of it has been downward. This has been a tough show today. The question that we began with, the question we've been dancing around with, is this: how do I live a life of beauty and impact today when I've experienced so much pain and so much loss yesterday? And there is no finer example than our guest today. His name is Steve Grant. He spent 32 years with Northwestern Mutual Financial Network in Greenville, South Carolina. He is president and founder of Chris and Kelly's Hope Foundation. It's the reason for that foundation that brings us together today, my friends. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks.
And it's an honor to have you. You have shared the story, and the folks can go online and learn more. But you share the story of losing both of your boys, your only two children, and your marriage, really, to drug use. Not yours, but theirs. You had two children, young men, carried out of your house in body bags. You did everything humanly possible, including prayer, to encourage these kids to choose a different path. And nothing worked. And I want to back you up into the second funeral.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell you we were going here or not, but Every time I put on a tie for a funeral, it makes me sad. It could be a 130-year-old friend of mine, and I'm like, oh, it breaks my heart to think of the old neighbor leaving the world. And you're doing this now for the second time in 2 years for your loved one, your little boy. Just walk us through that experience.
You know, a very close friend of mine in Greenville's mother died last Thursday and was buried on Sunday, and she happened to be buried about 300 yards from where both my boys are right now. And I don't go to the cemetery often because I don't truly believe they're there. I do go there. They share almost the same birthday, so I do go out there, and I'll sometimes sit. I'll sit with a lawn chair and a cigar and enjoy a cigar for an hour with them. But the second funeral was very interesting because the entire community was shocked. That no one could believe it. Kelly's drug use was very different from his brother's. It was a very short period of time. He was introduced to heroin in Charleston, South Carolina. They had just signed a record deal. They were really going places. He was 3 hours away from graduating, and one of the band members introduced him to a girl who introduced him to heroin. Just a shocking thing for all of us to even think about Kelly putting a needle in his arm, because he I won't say he was afraid of his shadow, but it's to this day I can't conceive of it. And yes. that's just the pull of that drug, and to be burying him was a very shocking thing. And one of the things I told myself was, after Christopher died, I went back to work and really made Kelly go back to school and let's get our lives back together. And the reality was, I was sliding. I honestly was drinking a little too much myself. I was medicating myself, and after about 3 years, pulled myself up, because I was in a deep slide, and subtly I really had a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress syndrome from my son's death and my divorce. And by the grace of God, I pulled myself up. And then Kelly comes along, and he has this issue for a very short period of time and passes away. And I guess going through Chris helped me better go through Kelly. But you got to handle them both differently. And Kelly's was just more of a pure tragedy and a big surprise to everybody involved, because he was very ashamed of what he was doing. And outside of me and a few other people, nobody really knew that he had a heroin problem. He kept it that much of a secret. So it was a very sad funeral, and it impacted the community a great way.
It impacted you in a great way too. And I'm wondering if you can just share with us a couple of the ways that you were, a couple of the people, a couple of the prayers, what books, whatever it was, that in those dark days that followed, and there were many, I'm assuming, what is it that allows Steve Grant to take the next breath and move forward in life?
You know, I wake up every morning and I read. I have several devotionals on my table, and I've had those for years, and they always seem to get me through the day. You know, your boot camp, and I certainly don't credit you for the formation of this foundation and the way my life's turning around, but really the boot camp a month after Kelly died, where I thought I was going to listen to something about how to sell more life insurance, and I reluctantly went, and it turned out that the first sentence you guys talked about was, how do you want your legacy to be when you leave this earth? What do you want your legacy to be? And then you guys are using the G word, which you don't hear too often in sales meetings.
Great.
And
God, right?
God. And I just perked up, and I said, you know, this is what I'm here for. And it took a little while after that meeting to get the thoughts together and to do it right, but started this foundation in March. And it's been very successful, and it's very timely, because there's a lot of people are affected by this.
Well, tell us about the foundation, and where can we learn more about it?
Well, you can go to their Facebook page. It's Chris and Kelly's Hope Foundation. A lot of good pictures, a lot of good stories. You can go to their website. We have an international advertising agency who doesn't like me to use their name because they don't want a lot of people asking them for free help. But they were very nice to me and have done everything gratis, and They developed the Facebook page. They developed the website, www.chrisandkellyshope.org. They have also developed the logo that we use, and it's under the auspices of the Greenville Community Foundation. It's an umbrella of their charities. They didn't have a charity that addressed this need, and they're excited about it. This fall, we are the beneficiary of a high school competition called Spirit Week. It happens every year, and four high schools raise close to $200,000, and they pick several charities. One of the high schools was so compelled, they made us their sole charity this year. So it starts September 1st and ends September 7th, and they'll raise a few hundred thousand dollars, which will go to Chris and Kelly's Hope, and we're very excited about that. We also have a young man who was at a Bible study who read an article about our foundation in April. His youth pastor wanted to talk about this article, and this young man was so moved that Sunday he came home and told his parents that for his sophomore project, he's going to do a golf tournament. Well, he didn't realize his parents were customers of mine, and they said they knew me very well, and the parents are behind it, and this is going to be quite an event. It's going to be November 3rd in Greenville. We worry about football in our part of the country, yes. And Clemson's away at Duke, and Furman's off, and USC's off, so the stars aligned, and Furman never lets anybody use their golf course for free. But they're letting us use their golf course for free because they realize this is a problem that they worry about for their own students. And so it's going to be a huge golf tournament that's going to generate a lot of awareness and a lot of money for the foundation so we can help people. We've started to give back. We've given back to at least 10 organizations so far and trying to help. I'm speaking as much as I can about these topics to various audiences. The most exciting thing that I think is happening is if you've never been to Greenville, when you go, you're always going to be exposed to something called the Swamp Rabbit Trail. And it's a 15-mile bike path that used to be an old railroad track that runs from one end of Greenville County to the other. And it's 15 continuous miles of asphalt that they've weaved in and out of downtown. And it goes 15 miles, and it's basically flat, and about 2,000 people a day either walk it or ride a bicycle. Well, at one end of it is a 16-bed rehab facility for boys 13 to 18. It's the only program in the state that lets them stay for 120 days, and it's beautiful. It's totally paid for. It's been open for 18 months. It sits adjacent to the Swamp Rabbit Trail. And one of the things in rehab that you want to have is you want to have those boys stay active, and exercise is a big part of it. So we have collaborated with the Greenville Recreation Commission, the Phoenix Center, which is the arm for the Alcohol Commission, and the White Horse Academy, which is the name of the facility, to put Chris and Kelly's Hope Fitness Park on the Swamp Rabbit Trail. And it's going to be a great collaboration, and it's going to be a great way to make my son's story, our stories, aware to the community, to about 2,000 people a day that ride by it.
Unbelievable.
And it's going to help the kids at the White Horse Academy use it on a daily basis.
Are you starting to see glimmers of light again shine through the darkness of the two massive, really, the many massive losses of your life, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. You know, not a day goes by where I don't meet someone or hear from somebody that was affected by my son's death in a positive way or that I've helped in some way. This is everybody's affected by this. If you haven't been affected by it somehow, either through friends or relatives, you consider yourself blessed. And
I'm sure right now folks listening are thinking, gosh, what is wrong in Greenville? Right? I mean, they think this is a Greenville issue or a Steve Grant issue.
No, it's not.
We were talking before we went live that, it's an American issue and over 30%.
Yeah, it's a big issue. It's a huge issue. And many people think it's the number one thing we're fighting against in America for young adults.
So is one of your causes to bring the light a little bit brighter into an area that's been dark a little bit too long?
No question about it. No question about it. It's going to be a. I think if I can, if I can help one person, avoid drug use or teach them that 21 is the age when you can drink.
Yes.
And you're breaking the law otherwise. and at least in South Carolina. You know, those things. Just follow the rules.
So I'd like to have you kind of play role playing here and just talk to a few of the listeners right now. So for the listeners right now who are dealing with depression or drug use, alcohol use in their families, either their kids or people they love, what advice might you encourage these folks to grab onto right now?
Well, I would tell them to maintain a strong faith in the Lord, because I think the Lord will bring you through it, and I think the Lord will answer your prayers. Secondly, there's help out there, and there's nothing to be ashamed about having an addicted child or having an addiction yourself. There's a stigma about it, but there's nothing to be ashamed about because you're not alone. And there are plenty of services out there that will provide you with the things that you need. It's a great community of people. The people that are in recovery, they are a very tight group, and they're the most willing people to help you when you're down.
My friends, you've been listening to the living testimony of Steve Grant today. This is a man who has been through unbelievable pain and still has bright joy in his eyes and a big goofy grin on his face. And Steve, it has been a pleasure having you in the studio with us.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, John.
My friends, we asked the question today, how do I live a life of beauty and impact today when I've experienced so much pain and so much loss yesterday? And one way we think you can step forward is to go to the website, chrisandkellyshope.org. This is Chris and Kelly's legacy that they've left the world. We hope you pick up a little bit of their light, that you learn from their mistakes, and you also learn from their joy. Thank you for listening this time to this incredible show. And until next time, God bless you and continue to ignite life.
You've been listening to Rising Above with John O'Leary. To learn more about Rising Above and John, visit rising-above.com. Follow John on Facebook at facebook.com/speakerjohnOLeary. For speaking engagements, call 314-822-3282.